Blog Talk Radio.
Hello there. Hope you can hear me. Wait a minute, let me do this. Loudspeaker on. Okay, now I'm going to try and turn the loudspeaker off. But I can't get any sound. I'm sorry to do this technical stuff to you, but my cell phone decided to be temperamental just as the show was starting. So I hope everything is okay. The cell phone just started doing stuff that I haven't seen. It's giving me commands that I hadn't seen before. I don't know why. I turned the speakerphone on while Blog Talk is doing their countdown, and then I turn it off because, you know, talking to the speakerphone is kind of irritating when you're hearing it, you know, over on your end. And it started doing a bunch of weird things, and I don't know that I have. It appears that I'm still connected, but I have no way of knowing if my voice is going across the phone or not. So I hope it is. I have so little faith in technology, and I think basically every week I have some sort of doubt that my voice is actually going out, because there have been times that it wasn't. Found out later that there was no show, nobody could hear me. But anyway, here I am, yet another cell phone show. Had minutes this time, so we got through that part of it anyway. I do invite you to join me. I'm Mud Toe. I'm here in the Midnight Garden. And come and sit with me between the cranberries and the watercress, and we're going to be very uncomfortable because we're in the middle of a pond, if that's what we're sitting in between. But, you know, listen to me ramble on about whatever it is I'm going to ramble around on about this week, and I'll give you a whining alert. There may be some whining happening. I'm going to try and keep it under control. But it was an interesting week. And I'll tell you, but let me tell you first, let me tell you something that's just kind of cute, and then we'll work into the other stuff. I decided to move my bed from one side of the room to the other because we've had the very recent cold weather. I developed a brisk southeasterly breeze through my bedroom coming, you know, from the window. It's just not sealed up very well. So I had the bright idea after several weeks of this. I had the bright idea, well, maybe if I moved my bed to the other side of the room, you know, it wouldn't be quite so chilly. And so I'm pushing. I have a roll-away bed. It's just like a cot. And I'm getting ready to push this thing over to the other side. And what's on the other side of the room is my television and a table that the television sits on. This is a revered table. It's a game table that once was owned by my mother's Aunt Helen, who ran a root beer stand for years and years in their hometown. And this evidently is from that. And I've somehow managed to acquire this from the family storage. I guess I don't know what you call it. Somehow this table made its way to me. And I had to promise that I wouldn't get rid of it because it's a family heirloom. So anyway, this thing's sitting there, and I'm looking at the table, and I'm looking at the bed, and I'm saying, I wonder if that bed would fit underneath that table. I mean, not the whole bed. It's like one end of it. So, I mean, it would be, you know, the table, if you picture the table, would be sitting over one end of the bed, and the other end would be sticking out. So if you did that, you know, I'd lay down on the bed, and my feet and my knees I don't know, probably not quite up to my waist, but was would be underneath that table. And I don't know why, but this idea just fascinated me. So I, you know, took the cot, and it had to be, you know, it had to be some scooting around and positioning, but the cot did indeed fit underneath the table. It was right up against the table legs, but it would fit if I gave it enough, I'd do some wiggling, you know, to make it work. And then I got in bed and stuck my legs underneath the table, and wow, this is a weird thing. And I actually slept that way, and I got up and said, boy, that was a strange thing to do. I mean, it wasn't bad in any way. I mean, I'd worried about bashing my knees. I'd worried about getting up in the middle of the night and forgetting and trying to get out of bed and tripping myself and all that good stuff. But about the only thing was there was just this sort of claustrophobic feeling. It kind of reminded me of when I was in the MRI tube. And if you've never had an MRI, they put you in, the television doesn't really express what that thing is like. I mean, it puts you in that tube, and you open your eyes, and the sort of ceiling, the top of the tube, is like 6 inches away from your nose. And there's like no room in there at all. And you can't move your arms very well. You can't move your legs, and you just wonder what would happen. Things like, what if this guy is a psychopath and decides to just leave me here? These ideas all go through your head. It's very, very closed in, very claustrophobic feeling, and I had to really test my meditative skills to make it through, and I did make it through. And I was told most people don't. Most people give a shout, let me out, and they get. But the purpose of it was they were training people on how to use the MRI. They need somebody in there when they're doing that, and so I did. I got $20, and I sat there and laid down the MRI for an hour. And both times I've done it, I made it for the whole hour. So very pleased about that I was able to do that, and also to help save lives by training people how to use the MRI. But boy, that doggone thing is cramped. And that's how this stuff reminded me of, because the table was like right above my feet and my knees, and I really couldn't move my legs up and down at all without running into the table. So I spent this evening dismantling that. I got the table. I had to take everything off the table, and I moved the table off of the bed and off to the side of the bed and put everything back on it. And so I've sort of constructed a bedroom within the bedroom, if you will. I've surrounded the bed with furniture in an attempt to ward off the breezes that come through. And I really won't. I can't make a fair comparison because it's not as cold now as it's been in the past. It's been actually a fairly. It's been fair. That's what they call it. It's been fair the last couple of days. So until winter returns, and fingers crossed, maybe it won't. Although it probably will. It's only January. But until winter returns, I won't be able to fairly gauge what these new arrangements I've made. Well, I've been fascinated about rearranging the furniture in my room, and got me in debt with my parents a lot when I was a kid, because I'd be putting stuff in front of doors and stuff like that. No, you can't do that. But it's my room, I ought to be able to have the furniture. No, you can't have the furniture like that. So, practicality won out, and as it does today, usually. But I did sleep one day with my feet under the table. I thought that was kind of fun. I had somebody, a friend, drop over. While I had everything set up like that, they said, "What the hell did you do?" Just a thing, I just wondered. I just saw it and I wondered. Yeah, it popped into my head, occurred to me, could that work? And so I did the experiment. I made it work. I was Mr. Wizard. I made the bed table. The table bed, I don't know what else you call it. Those are the only two combinations I can think of. But I did it, and I'm happy I did it. And I know I'm secure in knowledge of what that was all about. So there's the fun part of the show. We'll leave that. It's not, again, I don't, the events about which I am about to report are not horrible. They're not horrible, terrible things. They're just kind of annoying things that could cause me to lose my apartment eventually, but not my life. So, the life is the first. Is losing the worst thing that could possibly happen, and probably won't happen, is I have to go and move back in with my parents, which is problematic because in a couple of weeks I'm going to be 53 years old, and I'm not supposed to be living with my parents anymore. Also, because, one hates to say this or even think this, but, they are, they are aging, and they are not always going to be able to host me when I screw up my life. so, I mean, these are the things that concern me about these the events upon which about which I am to report now. Let me start. We'll start with the most recent. This just happened yesterday. Right after the table bed was made. I have a friend stop over, and she needed a ride, so I chauffeured her about for a while, and then dropped her off. And as I was driving home, and this is about 1 a.m. As I was driving home, I was stopped at a stoplight, and I noticed, you know, from the reflection in the car that was in front of me, that I had a headlight out. My passenger side headlight was not working. So, you know, make a mental note. Obviously, that's something that has to be fixed. And the light changes, and I continue to drive home. And 2 minutes down the road, I am stopped by a police officer who tells me that my, passenger side headlight is out. And, yes, I know that. So he asks me for all the relevant paperwork, and he goes, well, let me tell you, he was a very young man. I mean, he might be just out of high school. He was a very, very young man. And behind him was an older officer. And the older officer was occasionally prompting him. He said, ask for his phone number, this, that, the other thing. And they go back in the car, and they're back there for a long time, and I'm starting to worry. Because I just noticed a couple minutes ago, I'm taking the car home. I'm going to park it, obviously not drive it at night until I can get the headlight fixed and then all that. I'm saying all the right things. But I think what was happening was, it was training day for the young officer, and they set up shop, and the first car that came by with anything sideways about it was going to get pulled over and going to get a ticket, and I happened to be the lucky one. So I take my ticket to the, this is like 2 a.m. I don't know, it's just maybe, okay, I know, yes, the headlight is, you have to have the headlights on your car, and it's I understand it's a violation to have a headlight out. But I what was I supposed to do? I mean, do you notice you have a headlight out? Do you pull the car over and walk home and come back and get it the next day? I mean, I thought my course of action was the correct one. I take the, I was on a well-lighted public street. I didn't see there was much more than the usual amount of danger. It's 1 a.m. There's very few cars on the road. I'm taking the car home. What else was I supposed to do? But like I say, I think this was preordained that somebody coming past that spot was going to get a ticket, and it just happened to be me. So I make my I haven't made a contribution to the community coffers for a while, so I go and check it out. How much is the broken headlight going to cost me? Not broken, it just it burned out, I guess, is what you'd say. But the ticket costs $152, plus it's 2 points on my license. And that part I couldn't figure out. I mean, it's the same number of points on my license as if I had been driving 55 and 35, and I couldn't, I just didn't get that at all. What had I done to deserve getting points, especially since I didn't have, I can see if I had a bunch of points already, and if I was, just screw you, copper, and all that kind of thing, or just being generally uncooperative and a shitty guy, that none of these things is true. I haven't had a traffic ticket of any kind in over 20 years. So it just seemed like a lot, but all the other, for that reason, the 2 points isn't going to really mean anything unless I decide to go ahead and become a traffic scofflaw. It takes a year, 2 years, they'll be gone. But it's like that episode of The Simpsons where Lisa got one grade on her report card that was less than an A, and she just couldn't. It really messed her up. I guess having those 2 points. I remember when I was younger, I always had points on my license, but then I reformed, and I grew up and just stopped being such a dick on the roadways. And the points went away, and as I say, I doubt that I've had any points on my license in the last 20 years. And now I do, and it makes me, I don't think I deserve them. So I air that grievance here on the radio. I'll say this. Here's my public scofflaw kind of thing. I think. Obviously, traffic tickets have their regular stated purpose, and there are certain people are just idiots and need to be curtailed. But I think for the most part, most people who get traffic tickets, that doesn't apply to. For the most part, traffic tickets are about raising money for the municipality. And I don't know if I can strictly say this was something like that, but I'm pretty sure it was it had a purpose other than strictly public safety, that really annoys me. But anyway, years and years ago, I was written a traffic ticket by no less a personage than the chief of police of Berlin, Ohio. And he was sitting there. I was coming out of the town and back onto the highway, so I was going from 35 miles an hour to 55 miles an hour. And I did it just a little bit too quickly, and the chief of police was sitting there keeping that last 100 feet safe, and I'm certain collecting a lot of probably what Berlin, Ohio mainly ran on was him picking up those traffic signs. Used to be a town here in my city here, a suburb that existed entirely to write moving violations. I mean, that's all they had. They had a police department of two people. That's all they did. They didn't investigate crimes. They didn't escort people to funerals. They didn't do anything other than write speeding tickets. It was a speed trap, a very famous speed trap, to the point where AAA wouldn't route people through that town anymore because of the reputation had gotten so bad. And the state had finally had to pass legislation so they could dissolve the town because it served no purpose other than to write speeding tickets. Fun. So that's my speeding ticket. And of course, I don't have any money, so I have to call my parents, my poor put upon parents that they are. I don't mean that sarcastically at all. They put up with a lot for me. And I call them and ask them for the money for my speeding ticket because I don't have it. And they were nice enough to give it to me. But I say at some point, and I hate to think about it, but at some point, because I want them to be around for a long time, this is not a permanent solution. So the other thing, on Wednesday, I went for my financial recertification. I have a HUD, Housing and Urban Development, not grant, but my HUD pays for my apartment that I live in, and it's based on my income and my continued craziness as certified by my doctor, and anxiety disorder that I have that qualifies me for this kind of housing, and I've known about this. Well, let me just start at the beginning. When I moved in here 3 years ago, you're told that because I have lots of fluctuations in my income. Sometimes I'm making not very much. Sometimes I'm making a little bit more. And so how does that? Because the income builds into my ability to get to keep this housing. And we were told, my social worker and I were told, that there's an annual recertification every January, and that's when all that is taken care of. Fine. So a couple years back, 2016, I had a job which I hoped was going to be a permanent job. Turned out it wasn't. But I made quite a bit more money than I usually make. I called this to the attention of my property manager and my friend, and again, I was told that will be taken care of at the research meeting in January. So not long after that, and I've had a long procession of property managers. So I'm on my eighth one now in 3 years. And my new property manager called me in and said, why aren't you reporting this income that you have? And I, of course, I have been, but I've been told it's to be done at the research. And they said, no, you have to tell us immediately. I mean, this is a change. This is a total change for me. And they, my new people that I've had since then have been insisting that, no, it was never that other way. It's this way. You're supposed to be, every time you have a change of income, you're supposed to be telling us. So I started doing that. And I think they decided very quickly that really wasn't what they wanted. Because essentially it means they're going to be doing a recert for me 8 or 9 times a year because the frequency with which my income changes. So we struggled our way with yet another residential manager through that all last year. And then finally in November, she told me, okay, this is what we're going to do is we took an average of your income and it works out to $405 a month. So that's what we're going to use for calculations from now on. And if you should happen to get a job where you're getting, like, say, more than $600 a month, for a period of time, bring that to us, and then we'll work with that. Fine. I can do that. So that was 2 months ago. Now I come in for my research with yet another property manager, as I said, my eighth one in 3 years. And she's doing the same thing that I wondered about. Why aren't you telling us about all this income that you have? And, going back to that same one from 2016, from 2 years ago. And she says, you're going to have to put up together a payment plan, and you're going to have to repay this rent that you should have been paying because you're making all that money. And I was like, I was told not to report it. And they looked at me like I'm crazy. And then, but I was there. My social worker was there when these things were said. And it was they're looking at me like I've been hiding this income from them, and they knew about it 2 years ago. I was called them the carpet about it 2 years ago, so they've known about it since then and not done anything about it. Well, then I came to find out they have a HUD audit. HUD is here, going through their books, and they haven't been able to figure out what they want to do. With because I have so many fluctuations in income, so I just sort of let it slide. And now HUD has come in, and I know what auditors always do. If you've got one file in 100,000 that's messed up, the auditor will always pull that file. Always go right to that one. So that's what happened. The auditor pulled my file and found that page about all that money I made in 2016. Oh, $11,000! I am so wealthy. What are you going to do with me? 11,000, that's not even up to the poverty line. But anyway, that's what I know. I'm thinking that's what happened, is that HUD discovered that piece of paper, and now they have to do something about it. So we'll see if anything actually happens. Like I said, last time they discovered it, nothing happened. They didn't adjust my rent or anything. But what I'm concerned about is that they put me on a repayment plan and say, I have to cave. It's 35th. They take... Rent is 30% of your income, so $11,000. If are they going to want $3,300 back? And so, how long are they going to give me to pay that? Because if it's only a year, I'm paying something close to $300 a month, and that's not going to happen. $300 is a very good month for me, and I have other things I have to pay too. So, does that then affect? Is eviction a consequence if I'm not able to make those backup payments? These are the things that are weighing on my mind. And so I don't mention them to my parental units because, first of all, I don't have the information. Nobody's told me what the backup payments might be. So I can't figure out and say this is the amount of money I'm probably going to need to be supplied by my parents fairly regularly, because that's my job helping medical students is here and there, and it's getting to be more there than here, as the folks out there hire more of the standardized patients. The more standardized patients there are, the less work I get. And oh, my poor supervisor too. He's going to hear from CHN again, because every time they do this, they verify my income. They call and they verify my income, and they just can't. I mean, it's all geared toward X dollars an hour, Y hours a week, or zero. Those are the only two alternatives. And it's like, you know, some months, you know, this month I'm probably going to make $68. And next month I might make $300 or $400. During the summer I'm not going to make anything from that job. So my poor supervisor has to tell them, look, I can't tell you what he makes an hour, because it just depends. And sometimes I half expect that he's just going to say, look, we need to not do this anymore, because I can't keep spending all this time on the phone trying to explain to my landlords what part-time temporary is, because they just don't seem to get it. At least their systems aren't designed to account for that. And I know, as in the research, I always knew that the research in January, it's my lowest time of the year. So it wasn't, and they have, you know, on the paperwork, they say go back 6 months, but they only ever asked me about 3 months. So, you know, I knew that research wasn't capturing the, you know, my better months, which tend to be, you know, April, May, June, at the university. And then also if I get that test grading thing that I do sometimes, those tend to be my best months. And the way they were figuring my income at the research wasn't capturing that. So naturally, you know, things get screwed up. And I suggested, you know, do some sort of, you know, rolling average and set up tolerances. And if I go over the tolerance, then we step up the rent. And if we go under the tolerance, we take the rent down. And but see, that's not the paperwork that has to be filled out is not, you know, it's not designed that way. And so you can't, there's really no room for creativity. You just have to do it this way. And it's the classic square peg in the round hole, and it's just not working. And okay, thank you for letting me get that off my chest. And now I'm all, so usually I'm pretty tired when I'm doing the show. Right now, it's not bad at all. And in fact, I'm getting a lot of adrenaline from talking about this. And of course, that's a bad thing now, because I have to get to sleep, as I have to get up relatively early, get to the bank, and make sure I get a money order to pay my traffic ticket. And then I got to take my car in and get the headlight fixed so that, you know, I don't have the problem again. I had mentioned my test grading. That's coming up again this year, and I have to put in a new application. So that has to be done tomorrow, because they're getting ready to send out the offer letters. I'm just flitting from here to there, and I have to get some sleep. So it's good that my show is now coming to an end. You're probably thinking the same thing, but thank you for listening and thank you for indulging. And if there's anything that came out of what I said that is helpful to you in any way, frankly, I'm shocked, but I'm glad. So again, thank you for tuning in, and have a pleasant good evening.